matching purple.
We're
purple
very matchy today. It drives Peter crazy. He likes it when we're in opposite shirts. I'm Jen.
I don't think it contrasts well, and I'm Peter, and I am not happy with our look.
I think it's cute. That's I think it's sweet.
But nothing could be cuter than the little munchkin.
Don't. She's
Lulu's
settled.
A little settled.
Don't mention
today.
Her. Just Fair let her enough. Be settled.
Fair enough. So I want to see if we can do
something. I carry her up and down the stairs.
Is that better? Is that better? Yeah, I think that one's better. That's good. That's good.
Whatever floats your boat.
So if any of you guys saw our Instagram Facebook post from a few hours ago.
Apparently you cut it at a certain point because Jane said that he saw the post, but that it stopped before we opened it. Yeah. So I don't know what happened on the post.
That's interesting.
I can only say what happened on the video I gave you.
Okay. Well, I don't know.
They might not even have seen it. It was like a teaser to the new studio.
The new studio is coming. It's all coming in, falling into place.
It is. It's coming together. We might be in there, or we probably will be in there for the Festivus celebration on December 23rd, which we are starting to put together. I invited Vosh. I'm going to see if he'll come because that would be way fun.
Did you invite Katie?
I did invite Katie, and she's going to see if she can.
Okay. So it looks like things are coming together.
Yeah. So we're going to be having a Festivus.
Ron Placone is coming.
And
you should reach out to... probably Katie Ouellette and
Sure.
So Lauren Ashcraft.
Yes, that's good ideas. So the people who don't know Fest, it occurred to me when I sent Vosh an email that maybe he doesn't know what that is. Some of these people are really young, so maybe they don't know. So the Festivus for the rest of us, for those of us that are Seinfeld era, because anybody on here probably knows because we go hello. But anyway, there are several parts of Festivus. It starts with the getting of a Festivus pole, which we will erect our Festivus pole. And then there is the airing of the grievances.
That's the big part of the show.
Normally that occurs during the Festivus dinner, but we'll just do it. You know, it's the airing of the grievances. And then the host has to take on like a guest and be pinned to the ground for feats of strength. I'm not sure how we're going to manage that.
Yeah, you'll have to fight Graham or something.
I don't know. And then those are really the big things about Festivus. But there will be a significant airing of grievances.
So before we
bring... A lot of problems.
Yeah. Well, we've got a lot of problems with a lot of people. And you're going to be hearing
a lot of problems with you people.
So before we bring on our super guest of the evening, Randy Cranko, would you like to talk about the psychotic behavior of two congressional representatives that...
I only know about things because I hear what other people say about them because I'm not on that platform.
Well, you have a very soft spot in general as it is for Representative Omar.
Well, I love her and she's a hero. She's a shiro, to be very cheesy. But she tolerates so much nonsense and hatred, and these people are so ignorant. And if this woman, Lauren Boebert, is not, to me, she is a complete testament to our failings as a country in terms of our education system, in terms of our morals, our values. She is the epitome of just something like that to me. First of all, this is a workplace. Like, this is someone who is our employee that's there to work. And to be talking about a coworker like that and joking like it's something funny, and she's disgusting. She's disgusting. And now I just recently saw some videos of her mother on racist rants. And I'm thinking,
so the apple doesn't fall.
The apple does not fall from the tree. And this is as trash can be. Like, these women are such trash. And it upsets me because I do love Colorado. I went to college in Colorado. Granted, that's Boulder, which is not necessarily representative of the state. But to me, it's just, this is who people in the Colorado Springs area have elected. Like, I can't even. She's a horrible human being.
And again, you know, she says what she says, and then Representative Omar not missing any opportunity to get in front of a camera is basically wanting people to see that this is the type of, this is just one example of probably thousands of messages that I get of people telling me I'm going to slit your throat. And
people have no idea what she deals with. Like, none whatsoever.
Like, I don't want to put down other representatives, you know, who I'm kind of angling towards, but stop thinking that what you go through is even a fraction of what this woman goes through.
This woman goes through bad.
She probably by herself goes through more than everybody else combined.
Yeah.
Because she wears the hijab. So she sticks out like a sore thumb.
And she's a Black woman who speaks her mind.
100%.
People don't like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and she is not in an area like Rashida Tlaib is in Michigan, where it is a very strong Muslim community. That is not what Ilhan represents. She is in the Twin Cities.
There is a very large Somali community there, very much so. And that is where she came out of, was from like community activism in her community. I mean, that's what she is, totally a grassroots person. But so she then played what a typical death threat sounds like in the day of Ilhan Omar, and basically called out this nonsensical behavior as being completely unproductive, and which it is. And then apparently there was a meeting. There was a meeting. There was our phone. There was a phone call. Like
a conversation.
There was a phone conversation. And it turned out, and I can't even get into the he said, she said, whatever, any about that, like whatever. Here's what I know, is that Ilhan Omar said, this conversation is over, and hung up the phone. That is all I need to know. And what's so interesting about it is what came out of that conversation was that moron actually thinks that somehow Ilhan Omar owes her an apology.
Yeah.
I cannot wrap my head around that.
Well, again, it's
Oh my God, what a privileged, white, spoiled, I can't.
Yeah.
Like, I just can't. Like,
and I've always said that the white women in the suburbs are the most dangerous.
So unfortunate.
Especially the ones that are comfortable. And it doesn't matter if they're liberal or conservative. Mm. There is just this air of entitlement that they feel is around them.
Very racist, by the way.
And again, you're a congressional representative, one out of 435 representatives, and this is the hill you want to die on. You want to go after Ilhan Omar?
That's what you're honestly, but what
and you call them the jihad squad?
Oh,
like, you guys are I mean,
are you wanting people to hurt them? Like, because that honestly, well, right, but that's what that displays. But it's, I would like to say that apparently the Denver Post put out an article or an op-ed or something like that, basically apologizing to Ilhan Omar on behalf of the state of Colorado and saying, we do not agree. We believe that she should be reprimanded.
Which is even more interesting, because the one huge difference between Bobart and Green is that Marjorie Taylor Greene is in a plus 27 red district.
No, the biggest difference between them is a bottle of peroxide.
Well, sure, but Bobart is only in a district that's like a plus 4, I think, R. So it's not like she can't be unseated.
Right, right. There could be a Democrat that's infinitely more appealing.
Maybe so, but again,
the truth is anybody is infinitely more appealing.
That's true, but again, where are we today?
I don't know. She's so horrible to me. She is so horrible. It's really a toss up between her and the bleach. Either way, they're both really, like, they're, to me, such bimbos.
Well, maybe we could have a comedic
Bimbos.
Maybe we could have, like, a comedic response to that, because our wonderful guest for the evening has just arrived in studio. You know him from various
Blue Bandit
events. And, of course, he has, he's actually run for the U.S. Senate and for the governor. And, of course, I think it'll be very interesting to talk to him about running against Governor Cuomo, New York, you know, what was that like?
And that'll be really interesting, because we could lead into one of our stories tonight, which is bye-bye, Fredo.
Yeah. Oh, poor Fredo.
Poor Fredo.
Randy Credico, welcome to
General. Not to mention that I also ran for mayor.
Mayor. Well, there you go.
2013. They call me a perennial candidate. I ran in 2010, 2013 for mayor, and I did very well. In a field of eight, I finished sixth. And against Cuomo and Teachout, I finished third. So 3 out of 3. But Schumer, I got blown out. And I might run for governor again. Now, like, I'm not going to do my Andrew Cuomo right now.
That's good.
Yeah.
I used to do a great Andrew Cuomo. And nobody else could do him. And I've known him for a long time, way back. In 2003, when he jumped into the Rockefeller drug law movement, he parachuted in. And once he became governor, he didn't give a shit and didn't give any clemencies. I've been driving him crazy ever since. The guy is a corrupt individual. He used to have this guy, Joe Prococo, who's in jail right now, who was his chief of staff, follow me around to make sure when I was up in Albany, I wasn't hammering the guy. I was doing comedy shows up there at a place called The Hollow, and he'd send Prococo in there. Prococo would take me out fishing because Cuomo knew I knew where all the skeletons were buried with that son of a bitch.
Yeah, he's definitely very shady to me, and like everything about him just seems kind of creepy. And then the way the nursing home incident is what really set off most people. I just think he's a thug. Like, well, I just think he's a thug.
The nursing home thing is very important. The nursing home, because he exploited it and he fudged the numbers. He was late in the game. And then moved all those people from hospitals. He got money from the nursing home, companies, and they were all immune from prosecution. Look, the guy is a transactional figure a bad guy. He comes off as he's a civil rights dude, but his father built 37 prisons in his 3 terms as governor, and Andrew was a chief of staff.
Talk a little bit about what you were just talking about in terms of the drug war and the lack of, clemency, but I mean, I am not as familiar with New York drug laws. I mean, they're probably not as bad as ours down here in Florida, but obviously it was not where it should have been as soon as it should have been by someone who is supposedly a Democrat.
Well, wait a second. You know, the drug laws were Rockefeller drug laws in 1973. When he was running, he was moving to the right. And, you know, Nixon kicked off the drug war in 69, I believe it was 69, 1970. But it was New York that instituted these. And this is for all drugs, marijuana. You could get 15 to 25 years to life. And they made a change under Governor Kerry in 78, 79, and got rid of the marijuana part of it. But it was... it was draconian. Of course, you got first-time offenders for possession of X amount, small amounts. You could get, 25 to life, 15 to life if you went to trial and lost. That was the minimum. And if you sold a dime bag, you could get 8 1/3 to 25 years. And if you did it twice within a 10-year window of getting out, you could get 12 1/2 to 25 years. So there were a lot of those. I organized at the time, when I got involved in it, 97, I had just finished working on Richard Belzer's HBO special.
Love that guy.
Another Lone Nut is what it was called. And he and I did a lot of blow over the two-month period of time. We did a lot of blow during the writing and the production and then the editing. And when it was over, I was so burnt out. I was still doing comedy at the time, but I said, that's it. And so I went to Florida, checked into a hotel room there. Of all places, I go to Florida where there's like plenty of drugs, and just dried out somewhere near Tampa, somewhere in Hillsborough. I just like dried out for a week. And I saw this guy who had just done 12 years in prison, got clemency by the governor at the time, Pataki, who was doing 15 to life for a first time drug offense. I met him. He was a painter. He painted his way out, Tony Papa. And I said, I came back and I started organizing with him families of prisoners, just like the mothers of the Plaza de Mayo in Argentina, that kind of concept, under the rubric of the William Kunstler Fund for Racial Justice, which I became director of. It was a great honor to do that for 13 years. And I got out of comedy. I would do it occasionally, but I didn't want to work comedy clubs anymore. Do you think I really want to work those comedy clubs down there in Florida? I hated it, man. The last time I worked, it was the worst road trip.
Got a bad reputation here in Florida. A lot of comedians do not like to come here.
It was one of the worst road trips since the Donner Party tried to make it to California the last time I was in Florida. But my uncle lived down there. He lived in Miami. He was an ex-CIA agent, owned cruise ships, Scandinavian Sea Escapes, and he lived in Coral Gables. And it was a little more civilized down there. But I worked in the Panhandle. Can you imagine that? Fort Worth Beach. I worked there and I almost got killed by, I worked this place. It was a strip joint with nothing but people from the service. This is in 83. And I really almost got killed there because I was attacking Reagan because Reagan was their guy. And I was talking about happening.
I did the best I could and I tried,
this is better.
My head is melting. So, I did Reagan on the Tonight Show. It went over big, but then that was a year after Fort Walton Beach, which was the worst gig. And I've done every toilet in the room, but that place was scary, and I couldn't wait to get out of there. It was like Midnight Express. It was like
That's Floribama. We call that Floribama.
What part of the state are you in?
I'm near Fort Lauderdale.
We're in the same area, right? We're basically, I would say, the area that we're in is directly in between Fort Lauderdale and Miami. That's basically where we are.
There was a place called Bojangles. I used to work there in Fort Lauderdale. Do you remember that club?
That sounds familiar. Yeah.
Well, it was a tough crowd. It's always Rob. It was a rough crowd. You know, work in Florida.
What a crowd! What a crowd!
Oh my God!
Well, I love Rodney. Rodney's right up there.
I worked at Rodney. Rodney's club. When I moved to New York in '81 from Las Vegas, first in L.A. then Las Vegas, I moved to New York. I worked there for 3 years. It was like.
Is there footage of you doing Danger Fields? Because I would definitely look for it online.
I'll tell you, it's got to be somewhere. Because Rodney and I, who was the cheapest son of a bitch I ever. Worked for three shows of 7 nights a week. He couldn't pay me, but he let me slide on the cover charge, basically. You know, I did. And you had to work the prom season. And he would never work that club. He'd only go up to Catch a Rising Star and break in his material there, but not that club. Dangerfields was the worst bridge and tunnel club in the city, especially during prom season. I remember one time, let's tell you the story about Rodney going up to Catch a Rising Star. I did a show. I was in between shows at Dangerfields. I walked up to Catch a Rising Star. He did a set there. And when it was over, he said, "Hey, Randy, you working the club tonight?" I said, "Yeah." Come on, let's take a cab back. I'll pay for the cab. So we get in the cab. We go down York Avenue. It was only like 15 blocks. And the cab meter read $2.30. I'll never forget this. $2.30. He gives the guy three ones and says, "Take a half a buck out for yourself." So he took the two dimes. All right. That's Rodney.
Wow. And I always, and the perception of him was always that he was the most like, free spender in the world. Like he basically the character that he played in Caddyshack is the guy that he supposedly is in real life. I guess.
And he gave me a quarter ounce of blow. That was it at the MGM Grand in '91. When I was working the Sands Hotel, he says, "Hey, come over to the MGM, would you please, and bring that dancer Betsy with you." So Betsy went over. He had seen the show. I was working the show with Mickey Rooney. He went down there. He saw the show, and he says, "Yeah, bring that dancer Betsy, the one in the hot pants, you know." So I went there, and he says, "Take this." He was in his bath. He always wore a bathrobe. Always wore a bathrobe.
Yes. And he fancied himself as Hef, but didn't quite.
He had a lot of problems with women. You know what I mean? He had a lot of problems with. He was a funny guy, though. You know, he worked hard on his craft. He used to be a siding salesman. He used to sell siding. Did you ever see the film Tin Men? That's Rodney. Was the closer. He would like sell siding, aluminum to brick houses in Queens, and he made a fortune doing it. Got out of show business. He was started at 19, got out at 29, went back in at 49.
And we're speaking with Randy Credico. What would you say, Randy, has happened over probably, I guess you would say it's been about 5 to 10 years or so, maybe even longer, but comedy is not the same anymore. This whole idea, and I know that Jerry Seinfeld in particular used to talk about how he will not play, college campuses anymore. It's way too PC. You cannot actually have fun and just say what's on your mind. And we've obviously seen the complete meltdown hysteria during, the Trump years. To me,
comedy. Well, now look at Dave Chappelle.
I'm a left-wing comic, all right? I'm a liberal left-wing comic. I was on a Tonight Show. When it comes to foreign policy, I got kicked off the Tonight Show. I did that in '84. I spent the whole time talking about U.S. policy in Central America. Of course, I don't like either party. You know what I mean? So it's not. I'm not into any party anymore. I'm over it. So, I just came from a different perspective. I started out doing impressions. That was it. I worked Vegas. I worked the Sands Hotel. This is in '75 before Seinfeld even started. And Seinfeld was a friend of mine. When I came to New York, and he was working out of the clubs, and we used to hang out together. We'd went down to see Jackie Mason together.
But, you know, this whole thing is too, I'm out of it, man. You know, just, you're pulling me back into a life. I'm really, I run this, I do comedy occasionally, and I do a lot of fundraisers. But, you know, I do a radio show in New York City, two of them, and I do a podcast. And that's basically what I'm doing right now. As far as comedy goes, it's, I had a joke in 88. I said, there are so many comics. I said, every time a steel mill closes, there's 5,000 new comedians. I mean, everybody is a comic. Everybody and his mother is a fucking comic. So it shows you that people are looking for identity, looking for self-worth. Everybody's doing comedy right now. And so you go down there. I can understand why Jerry Seinfeld doesn't want to go in there. The whole crowd is different. It's Chuck E. Cheese time in these rooms.
Yeah, I feel like people are so easily offended. Their feelings get hurt. I don't agree with Chappelle's last show and his thoughts on some of those issues, but
I don't know about that. I think you and I would probably have some differences on that, but you know, I'm not here to debate. I haven't seen Chappelle. I met him when he was 19 years old. I don't watch it. I don't watch comedy. I don't watch the comedy. I'm watching like Babylon Berlin, which I recommend on Netflix, a three season series, which is in German. You can watch it dubbed, but it's like the best series. I don't watch it anymore. I like the old timers.
Right.
I really like the old timers. When I say the old timers, people, you guys are too young to know, but guys like Pete Barbeauty. I don't know if you remember Pete Barbeauty. Mort Saul was a big influence on my life. Even, you know, Mort was left and he turned to the right, but I was always friends. He got me into, I was working Vegas. I told the story earlier today. I was in Las Vegas working the place called the Royal Inn Casino. This is in 75, and I was 19 years old picking pimples. And what's his name was working at the Hilton. And I did a show with his wife, a local TV show, and he saw it. And he says, you know, get off of those impressions and start reading the paper. And, you know, and so that's what I did. But I worked Vegas. I worked reviews. I did old impressions. I did Nicholson, you know what I mean? I'm back then. Bill Hicks used to laugh about it. He says, when I saw Credico, I thought he was just a hack impressionist. But then I influenced the guy. He got very political at the end in 91. And he and I became the closest of friends. I did a eulogy for him at Caroline's. But, you know, look, I don't want to censor anybody. I don't believe in censorship. But if you don't like Dave Chappelle, people should be able to watch him. If you Sam Kinison, I agree with him a lot.
If only he was alive today.
I find that's a problem now with comedy, because the whole point of comedy is to do that. The whole point of comedy is to be like, question things and push the line and really make you. That's the whole point of it. So to. I don't believe in censorship, period. But that's the point of comedy.
Look, this is a complicated issue, but for me, I don't believe in it. If people want to pay and see comedy, I don't care what it is, they can go see it. Once you start, you know, drawing the line, this is acceptable, this is not acceptable. Just like, you know, I heard you say a few things about Assange before. Once you start censoring somebody or putting someone in jail for what they expose, then who's next? Are we next here? Are we going to be next that they're going to go after your podcast because they don't like what you're saying? No censorship should be out there. Look, I disagreed when they censored Trump and they put him on. Even though I didn't like Trump, I didn't like Biden. I voted for whoever the Green Party candidate was. Who was it? Howie Hawkins. Yeah. I would have voted for Bernie Sanders because he's the only guy I haven't been able to. To a president whose voice I can do in a long time.
Well, look, you know, I really wanted to become the president of the United States, but my
That's
good friend
John, you do that better than I do. But let me hear your George W.
He doesn't do W. I can't.
George, yeah. Randy, believe me when I tell you, we're totally coming back in 24, and let me tell you why. Because we're going to make America great again.
Again.
And the people are too PC, they're too soft, they're too, they're not manly, they're too weak.
Yeah, you're
right. I think it's mandatory in Florida. The only mandates they have in Florida is that you got to support Trump.
Let me tell you, I'm not. We both agree that if there's one person who could beat him, it's Ron DeSantis. I don't think people are taking him seriously enough.
No, they're underestimating him. They are.
And I think that the GOP is also they're the smarter party of the two when it comes to politicking. So I actually
they work harder. The thing is that they want it more.
Yeah.
They it's that some people will fight. And they'll do everything they can to win. We're going to get into a political divide here. The Democrats don't seem to want it that much. They're not offering anything. That's why I might run for governor, because you got four hacks, career hacks, running for Democratic nomination. Everyone's Democratic nomination wins. But just to throw a bowling ball into the race, I'm considering jumping in January because you're going to have four, Letitia James and the three others. But they're all tied in. They've done it all of their lives. Like Thomas Jefferson said, he worked 8 years. He's going to retire and he's going to rise in life as a citizen. In other words, he was doing service and then he said, I'm going to go as a citizen. These people do it. All politicians, they want to be there forever. And that's what these guys do. And I know in Florida, too, Charlie Crist has been in the office for a long time.
He's running again now for governor.
DeSantis is going to be there. What was he before he was governor? What did he do?
Friend of Trump.
No, but DeSantis was actually a congressional representative. He was a representative up in the northern part of the state. And, he's got a lot of credentials. He was Harvard educated. He was JAG. And he's got a really good pulse on where the people are.
Well, I'm saying as a Floridian, guys have the right to that. I'm sure he's going to do very well in the Miami area. He'll do very well in the northern area. What do you call it? He won't do well in the in the condo area, but he'll do well up there in the panhandle, no doubt. And where my mother's from, which is a little city called Gainesville, not even Gainesville.
Hawthorne.
You know where Hawthorne is?
Yes.
I don't, but I know where Gainesville is. Okay.
Well, it's right outside of Gainesville. My mother's from there, Hawthorne. And my her brother and sister died in 1920 of the Spanish or the American flu. All right.
Wow.
Wherever it emanated, but they died at age 6 and 5. In that part of the state, most people died not in 1918, they died in 1919, 1920. So my grandmother went back there in 1977 to go see her kids, thinking they were still alive. She had Alzheimer's. It runs in my family. Three things. I'm a AAA kid. Alzheimer's, arthritis, and alcoholism. Those are the three things that I'm a AAA kid. All right. So, there's no cure for any of them, but you can temper them. And that's why I drink non-alcoholic beer. All right. Not a big thing in Florida. Now, how's your buddy Roger Stone doing? Because I know you're going to bring up that issue.
It's very interesting. And Lourdes, of all people, likes him.
Roger Stone.
Yeah, I'm not kidding.
He's wearing a plastic mask to me. Yeah, he's very creepy looking.
It's this whole thing in politics, and I think this is one of the things that really turns a lot of people off, is this whole, it's the consultant class, it's the op class, and it's all that. And Roger Stone is one of those guys who, he's a slimy bastard, but my God, he's that guy, if you're trying to win, that's the kind of people that, you typically hire, because there is no line they won't cross.
Let me tell you something about that. Roger, I don't think is ideological. I don't really, if I...
I would agree. I would agree.
That he's into money. I know he smokes pot and he's a libertine. He hangs, Roger is not an ideologue. He plays one on TV. If there is more money to be made on the left, he would become Che Guevara. But there's no money to be made on the left. Roger knows where the money is, and he likes to live the good life. He likes cars, and he likes houses, and he likes to travel, and he wears the best clothes in the world. So there's no money. He worked for the Republican Party in the state of New York because he was making $30,000 a month working for them. But he can think like a leftist. I mean, when I was running for Senate, he knew how to take all the positions against Schumer. Because Schumer is not a leftist. Schumer's he's a corporate whore, is what he is. That's all he is. He's a Wall Street runner. That's what Chuck Schumer is. He has no ideology. But just to stay in office, you know, and he broke the law when he ran for Congress. He used his staff up there in Albany when he was an assemblyman, and he used his staff and paid him with warrants from the state that was supposed to go for his staff to work for him, not for his campaign. And he almost went to prison for it. But Rudy Giuliani stepped in.
Another member of that club of real classy people.
Giuliani, 5 years, 6 years. I like Chuck Schumer. You know his head? His shoulders are now above his head. This is a great city.
He's going to start taking over that turtle reputation.
What happened to his shoulders are now floating above. You know, it's like he's got.
I met him many years ago, and he was a very small statured man, to say the least. But
he's another Italian conservative, and I'm Italian American, and I'm the liberal Italian. And I say, why is every Italian, Rudy Giuliani, Alito, Scalia was, Joe Bruno was. It's like the most progressive Italian American public figure is Joey Bottafuoco. I mean, that's really I am, but Italian Americans are very conservative. DeSantis is Italian, isn't he?
No, he's Greek, I believe. When I think about, because I'm from Jersey, and you know, my closest friends that I grew up with were all Italian and Irish, and you know, there is. Monmouth County, New Jersey, it tends to have a very hard red lean. And
it's a Catholic thing.
It's also a bravado thing. That's a big thing in the culture. And they like guys like Trump that have bravado. They like guys with balls. I hate to say it, but that's a big thing. And there's this perception that politicos on the right have balls and politicos on the left have no balls. And
I'll say one thing. You know who you said you grew up and he fits that character? Is a guy who I became very close with in Las Vegas, who you know possibly, and that's Steve Sciarippa. Now, Sciarippa and I go way back to 75, 76, when he was a bouncer at a place called Palisades, the Brewery. And so he and I became, I knew his first wife, Melissa, and she died in 1980, and Steve really was hit hard by that. Then he became the bouncer at the doorman, and then the manager of the Improv at the Riviera. And then I was there. David Steinberg said, "You'd be great." And he was doing like these small shows, and he put Steve in there. I mean, he's the perfect stereotype for a mobster, you know. Steve Sciarippa. And then, you know, the next thing you know, he used to you're stinking up the Riviera. He used to tell me when I was emceeing at the Riviera, he'd say, he'd be the door guy. And he'd say, "You're stinking up the room." He always was busting my chops, that guy. But
that's Tripp. And you know, he's a great testament to a guy who was just always consistent. And he always had roles that he could play, even though they were bit parts, you know, it wasn't really extensive. And then he strikes gold. That's what happened. Yeah. David Chase was like, "Hey, I want this guy for The Sopranos." And that's all she wrote. And then it's like, you know, and then in the last two seasons, he takes on a massive role within the show. And from everything I've ever heard, great guy. Couldn't have happened to a better person.
Well, you know, he really is a great guy to hang out with. I can remember like 1980, he had his friends. He had all of his Bensonhurst friends come out there. And his closest friend was Gilly Rizzo's son. He had a nickname, but he used to show up, Gilly Rizzo's son. There's one time at the Riviera where Gilly was there. Who was Sinatra's like main guy, Gilly Rizzo. He used to have a club in New York City called Gilly's, but he was always with him. And so they were at the steakhouse at 2 o'clock in the morning. Steve invited me in, and there he was with his best friend, Gilly Rizzo's son. Gilly Rizzo was there, and Sinatra, Sinatra and me. I never said a word. I just sat at this table, and Sinatra was bitching about things. He had a bottle. He had a bottle of it wasn't Jack Daniels, but the Black Label.
Johnny Walker Black.
That's what he did. Johnny Walker Black. Yes, he had that on his right in front of him. It was one of those like magnums, you know. And so they were just sitting around talking, and it was just great to be part of it. And poor Gilly died in a terrible wreck. He got into a fire hit something. The car caught on fire and he couldn't put the windows down. He couldn't get out. He got stuck. The electricity went out in the car. But that's a Sharip and I used to hang out a lot. And he was one of those guys that you're talking about. All right. From Monmouth County. All right. So he didn't like the people I was hanging. What are you doing hanging out with Kunstler? What's wrong with you? And you're hanging out with Kunstler. If this is in Las Vegas, here, do a line. But, I can everybody I know that we're talking about tonight go back to a line of cocaine. That includes Sam Kinison. Sam was a big hitter, man.
I tell you, if only Sammy was, talk about just again, and he lived 1,000 miles a minute. And for somebody who I actually did enjoy, and he was a very controversial comic from the standpoint of you either loved him or you hated him. That's just kind
Rodney
of the way
he loved him. He did. Yeah. Rodney's stand-up show on HBO, and Rodney put him on his show. He worked at Dangerfields, and Rodney just absolutely fell in love with the guy and took him under his arm. He hit it big right away because he was struggling. He was at the Comedy Store when I first saw him, and people would walk out on him. But somehow he managed to put that act together and put that contrived anger into it. And, he was.
And to think that the guy was a preacher, like that's what he did, and he couldn't, he gave up on the church, and then he's like turns to comedy. And then, he his bit was only like 5 minutes long on the recorded part of Dangerfields. But let me tell you, that's like going on Johnny Carson. If you nail it, that's it. That's all it takes.
Right, That's all it takes is one big. It's like David Letterman did the Tonight Show. I watched it with Robin Williams at the Comedy Store, and he did
it. You got to hang out with Robin Williams.
Yes. Yes, I did. I did. Another guy, he was way back in 81. The only guy I didn't do any cocaine was Jay Leno.
I was going to say, and that's interesting. I would think that would be somebody you would do cocaine with.
Jay Leno would never do didn't do anything. I don't know if I ever saw him drink. Seinfeld never drank. Never did.
Those are squares. They're square.
Dennis Miller never did. Dennis Miller never got high. Those three guys I know, and Larry David would drink, but didn't get into the drugs. Larry David, by the way, is the talking head in that documentary by Laura Keitlinger. Have you seen it on me?
I have not.
No.
But he spins around the sun. You can see all of those comics. You ever know Don Gavin? Don Gavin's in it. John Biner's in it, who lives in northern Florida on the coast by St. Augustine. But 60 Spins Around the Sun. Take a look at it. Laura Keitlinger, Jack Black is the producer, came out in 2002.
I know who Laura Keitlinger was. She was with Jack Black for a while, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. But that's when it was. She started doing it when I was running a national tour called Humor for Hoffa. I actually worked for Jimmy Hoffa. I did all the PR. I did all of the videos. I did this national comedy deal, and the guy turned out to be a complete lout, and he's been there ever since. He saw me at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and he said I was doing Jimmy Dore's show, going around. I was invited to it, all because of the stone business, all right? Yeah.
The stone business. I want to clear him of all these false charges, being a back channel.
So
that's a good brand, though.
I want to look at the massa good my act.
So yeah. I'm there, and Jimmy Hoffa says, "Hey, there's Randy Cretico. I couldn't have made it without him. He's the guy who put me in office." And then he wouldn't take a picture with me because I was so controversial in 2018 with this whole Russiagate thing. That I was connected with Stone and I was a back channel. The whole thing was so ridiculous that I can't believe anybody bought it. Like Julian Assange would say, let me see. I got all of this hot material. Let me give it to Roger Stone to hold on to because he's not going to tell anybody. I mean, logic tells you that would never happen. Okay. Here, I got this stuff. I'm going to telegraph. I got the greatest story in the world. Let's give it to Roger Stone to keep a secret. Forget about it.
Why do you think so many of the American people are such dupes when it comes to politics? Why they bought? I mean, I saw Russiagate for what it was from day one. And when I look at what other people just and the way, Randy, the way that they like psychotically embraced it, like it was, oh my God,
because they fear mongering.
The Reds are here. They're under our bed, and then you got all of the hacks on the Beltway who are making money hand over fist, scaring the shit out of people about it.
You know why? You know why? Because we got wars to conduct.
I mean, it's very profitable. I didn't believe
it. Listen, we got to have a war with Russia or China. I mean, there are people sitting on a lot of arms right now. They got tons of arms. And this is it's like we got to buy vaccines from three companies here. We're paying for it. They act like they're giving it away. They're not giving it away. Here, Biden's telling everybody here, I'm giving it to all Americans. No, Americans are paying for it. Every time I get a free shot, I'm paying for it through tax dollars and at the high end. We're not getting a discount on it. You know, you're not getting a discount on it. Your taxes are paying for it. You're paying
and I
for
wish, the high end. And I wish more people would just, I mean, at some point you have to ask yourself, and I'm not saying that these variants aren't real. I'm sure that they are. But as soon as something comes about, immediately it's like, oh, you got to get another booster shot. I'm like, do you guys not see what's going on here? Like, do you not get it yet? Like, well, this is
being done. Look, I am vaccinated, but you know,
we're all vaccinated. All right,
well, let me tell you, you know, I have a friend of mine, a very close friend who had a close relative die, and she was vaccinated. The woman was vaccinated and still died. Now, it's still too early. The guy who gave me the shot, he was an old Indian guy at a pharmacy, he says, you're going to get real sick. When you, he says to me, I got real sick when I took, you're gonna get real, and I did. I don't know why a guy would tell me that before he gave me the shot. I said, is it effective? He says, nobody knows. This is really in the early stages. It was, you know, it wasn't like Jonas Salk working on it for a long time, and it's not a vaccine, you know? So, but I'm vaccinated. I I'm up in the country. Why am I vaccinated? Am I gonna get it from the chickens and the deers and the bear? Or my dog who's walked pacing over here. She's pacing. Bianca, she's still around.
What kind of dog is that?
I don't talk about vaccines. I don't talk about Building 7 because you can't win on those two subjects. So I never do talk about those two issues because they're too divisive and I don't want to get bogged down in a conversation about it. But I will say that they're profiteering off of it. That's for sure.
Yes.
I just want to know, what kind of dog is your dog?
She's a Coton de Tulliard.
Uh-oh.
That's my dog.
Come here, Bianca. You want to see her?
Lulu.
See, look, this is our Patreon sticker, is my Lulu.
Is that really? Where'd you get that dog?
I found it on Canva. And I know it's not meant to necessarily be a Coton. Come here, Lulu.
Come here, little pretty.
Is she really a Coton?
Oh, you'll see. You'll
come
see.
Come here. Well, keep it going there. Here.
Are you pretty?
Here, come here.
You're such a good girl.
Well, here you go.
There's your buddy, Lou.
Okay, see, that's what Lou would look like if I didn't keep her in puppy cut. Well, I keep Lou in puppy
she
cut.
She gives it a lick like Bianca does.
They're very licky.
Give me
right?
Oh!
She's like, I am not performing
Did
for you.
You see that?
Yeah.
She bit me.
Maybe she saw Lou and wanted to show her dominance. That's what it was. Right, Lou? Right?
Lou? This is Lou.
Yeah, let me see Lou. That is a Coton. You can tell by the nose.
I know. So, and the black eyeliner.
Yeah, definitely a Coton. Now, that's what Bianca would normally be doing, but she doesn't like to be used as a prop.
Yeah, Lou would climb back in, and she's the only child that didn't come from in there.
So one thing I definitely want, we definitely want to hit on, Randy, is we are huge proponents of Medicare for All, and we definitely have come to the conclusion that there's
on Medicare. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's no way it's ever going to pass on Capitol Hill. The way we see it is basically the same way it happened in Canada. It's going to pass in a province like it did in Saskatchewan and then move throughout the whole country. I think the same thing will happen here. The New York Health Act is, that is the closest I think we are right now. Is that something you would be prioritizing?
I would, you took the words right out of my mouth. If that's part of my campaign slogan, is that full medic the for New York State, you know, I would probably eliminate insurance companies and have just one fund that we all get into and like say, that's it. You guys get out. You know what I mean? Get out. You're not making money off of sick people. You're not doing it. How patriotic. That's not patriotic. Get out of here. Get a real job. You're not making money. You're not going to get in the middle. It's like car insurance, all this car insurance crap. You know, they got these actuaries. Every state is forces their citizens to buy insurance. Why isn't there just one fund that we can put our money into? And the same thing for Medicare for All. New York State would be the laboratory to have it. Yes. Everyone, that should be a guarantee. I'm glad that you said it. That's really, it's not even a progressive. Everyone should be
healthy. It's common sense at this point.
And European countries have it, you know? Yeah.
It's centrist. It's actually very centrist. If you find a very conservative person in the UK, they still think people are entitled to healthcare.
Well, and not only that, when I'm communicating with a conservative, I just tell them the most conservative position is Medicare for All, because you're eliminating the for-profit middlemen that have no reason to exist.
It saves money.
They are literally ripping you off.
They're the ultimate parasites. What are they?
Yeah, they're freeloaders.
Do something else with their time. Why did they jump into the middle of between a patient and a doctor? Who are they? Seriously, to make
profiteers.
Yeah.
You know what? We're going to be censored with this kind of talk.
We always get suppressed.
We do.
Huh?
We get suppressed.
Our channel gets hit hard. And
I did a telethon for Julian Assange, and that did not go over well as far as the algorithm. So there's certain things that if you talk about them, you'll get pushed to the bottom of the pile.
Are you serious? Is that true? Is that why my Twitter retweets, it doesn't matter if I have, Jesus on, I'm coming down every time I have a great show. I had one with Daniel Ellsberg the other day.
Daniel Ellsberg would also be somebody that would get you suppressed. Like, we have those people on that we want to talk to them, but people that are whistleblowers are not going to help with the algorithm.
So that is a built-in thing with algorithms.
100%.
All the whistleblowers.
You guys are more tech-savvy than I am. So in no social media.
There's no more power. I mean, look, the most powerful man in the world is probably, you could toss it between Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. But at the end of the day, the most powerful company by far is Google. Like, that's not even up for debate. They run the world in many ways.
In
terms of content, they run the world just like Goldman Sachs runs the world in terms of how the money moves. You know, it's just...
Right. It's scary, and it's very big. Brother,
Google is actually bigger. Now, tell me how that works. So Google would be bigger. I would think that Bezos, I have friends, a lot of friends, and I do occasionally will go. I won't go to Whole Foods anymore, but I will, if I'm in a pinch, I will go to Amazon to get like a quart or something like that. But I'd rather go to a big box place. But aren't we like feeding the monster that's going to kill us by going to Amazon?
Yeah, but at this point, like I order from Amazon. I do. It's convenient and it's easy. The problem isn't we're not going to boycott that at this point. That ship sailed. The only way to rein in things like Amazon are with corporate taxes and actually going after oligarchs for skirting what their responsibilities are.
To bring back,
it's got to be policy.
And to bring back sort of an FDR type of labor uprising, because that's really what it's going to take.
And tax rate.
Yeah. Well,
I want to have both of you work on my campaign. You talk about FDR and Medicare for All. When I ran before for governor, I did an FDR deal. It was a new deal that I was talking about back then. And all of my literature did have FDR, kind of programs that he initiated. But that's definitely if the Democrats did that, they would win. They're going to lose the
Congress. They can't do that because they're bought and paid for by corporate special interests. That's it. This is not complicated stuff. And I try
to
tell this to people all the time. The party is the party of Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi for a reason, because they are run by Wall Street and Silicon Valley
and the military industrial complex.
They'd rather lose the control of the House and the Senate. And Chuck's always, we're talking about the middle class, we got to help the middle class, never talks about the poor or the homeless, but that's who he's going for votes. And he always interferes in these elections. The more progressive person in a race challenging the Democrat in a primary, he'll always go with the corporate dude and get money from Wall Street to underwrite the campaign. Yeah, they're definitely going to, and I don't think he's going to care if they lose the Senate. What has he done? I mean, and they lose the House, but they're definitely at this point are going to lose 50 seats at least in the House, and probably they're going to lose control of the Senate, and then you're going to have Hindenburg as president for 2 more years. All right.
Well, look, I mean, a lot of those things are possible. The Democrats offer nothing. We know that they offer nothing, and they proved to us in 2016, and this was very, very clear. They proved that they preferred Trump to Bernie. It was that simple. It really was that simple. And they proved that. So once we saw that.
You're talking about the hierarchy preferred Trump over Bernie, right?
Correct. Correct. Why when the establishment of the party.
Bernie would have won that race. You do. I agree that Bernie would have beat Trump.
But 100%. 100%.
Oh, yeah.
There's no way I could hold my nose long enough to vote for Hillary Clinton.
We didn't.
Oh, come on. You didn't like the fact that she's coming out now and talking about the fact that Biden's really having a great presidency and you're just a bunch of morons if you don't see that.
Oh, my God.
It's like the most.
Give her the hook. She needs the hook. She needs to go away. She's like the exorcist at this point. She just will not go.
No,
she won't go away. And, you know, and I forgot. I was talking about this the other day. You remember when she came out and she had that dinner? She was having breakfast with a bunch of black leaders. But, you know, it was like really black leaders, Sharpton and Clyburn and all these hacks in the media, all these hacks in the media and in Congress, you know, that, you know, zeroed in around her rather than Bernie, as if any Democrat was ever going to win South Carolina, as if that's the primary. You win South Carolina, Alabama, they put everything in the South as if you're ever going to win that state as a Democrat. You're not going to win. So why do they lump all those states up front? So the person that beyond mainstream, she's whatever she is, she's just a hack. But what I was going to talk about was that she lives a mile away from two places that I've been a million times, and that's Taconic Women's Prison, and the other one is Bedford Hills Maximum Security Prison, a mile away from that house of hers. Yeah. And she coming out of the civil rights, and they all wondered, why isn't Hillary ever come here? Because she didn't give a shit.
No. She's a blue blood. How people don't say, like,
but she came out and said, like, she was, you had Morgan Freeman talking about her in these ads as if she was some civil rights crusader. Oh,
listen, God. You can at least say that Bill comes from the boonies of Arkansas, but she comes from the affluent suburbs of Chicago. It's like, come on already.
Doesn't have a Chicago accent, right?
She'll have whatever accent will get her votes.
Accent. I can't make out your accent.
He's Jersey.
My accent's Jersey. It just
where are you from? It just
depends on.
Me? Yes. I'm a second generation North Miami Beach.
Oh, really?
But my dad's family was Brooklyn and my mom's family was Philly, all Jews. And that was, you know, like when you were talking about all the Italians, it sounded to me like, to me, that's just like we play Jewish geography. The Jewish degrees of separation are very narrow. The gene pool is not big.
Well, let me tell you, there's a lot of similarities between Italians and Jews, by the way, particularly mannerisms, hugging, kissing, all of that.
Food.
And every Friday, believe me, in New York before Shabbos, every Lubavitcher comes up to me thinking you better get home before 5 o'clock. And here's like a pamphlet to read. I say, you're Jewish, right? And it's the mannerisms. You know what I mean?
Plus, how do you get in New York? Hey, Randy, how do you get a New Yorker to stop talking? Tie their hands behind
them. Yes, I know. I'm very animated. She does the same thing, right?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
But I'm a loud Jewish girl from South Florida.
And one last thing I do.
Are you Italian?
I'm not Italian. I'm actually Jewish and Irish. I have a very interesting combination.
He's a mutt.
I'm a mutt. But one thing that I do think that people don't really understand about why Cuomo in particular was able to get away with what he got away with. Cuomo was the Democrats' Trump. He had balls. He was a crooked son of a bitch. But let me tell you, he was a tough guy.
He was a tough politician.
No, people are scared of him.
They were all afraid of him except for me. He was afraid. I'm telling you, he ran when he saw me. But there's a documentary on it. It's called Lock Up USA. It's me, him, and Russell Simmons. And that guy was, you know, I brought him into the movement. I realized he was a louse and a phony. early on. And one day he called me up when he was running for attorney general and I was slamming him. He called me up. You know what I'm going to do when I become attorney general? I'm going to close down the fucking Kunstler Fund. I'm going to close it. I'm going to investigate you, you son of a bitch. And so they thought I had a tape of that. They were so scared that I had a tape of that. Mark Green, who was running, who always ran, asked me if I had a tape of it because I told him the story. And I let them think that there was a tape out there. I got so many stories. I did Anya Perrenpil's show right when he was at the very peak of his popularity. And Joy Behar started screaming at me because I was slamming Cuomo back in April of 2020. I was slamming him then. And he's having these daily infomercials, you know, with his corrupt chief.
With Fredo.
Don't call him this. I'm Italian.
Send Fredo to do this.
And Joy Behar isn't it, but she also went off on Bernie like that. She just didn't like him, right?
Yeah. Oh, no. No.
So did Sullivan.
She had Bernie on the show to tell him, you know, it's time for you to get over the Iraq war.
She's the dumbest fuck I've ever met. I got to tell you something. I've known Joy Behar way back when she was 80. And she used to work at the bitter end, and you know, she's chewing gum. She was a typical Queens comic that came in. She was a teacher. Why are you always doing that political stuff? She said to me. She never read a book. She never read newspapers. Suddenly, she got the gig on The View. You know, with the ratted hair up to here. She always had that. And as if she's the smartest person in the world. If you she's a house of cards in a windstorm. If you got to a conversation with her politically on any subject, she's this deep, you know, got a mouth this wide, but you know, a brain.
But isn't that kind of reflective? I mean, listen, I know
that's what they want on the TV.
That's what they want. That's exactly what they want.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, The View goes on Mondays through Fridays at 11 o'clock.
I'm loath to say that it is during the time of day that I am part of their sought after audience. However, I do not partake in The View.
I've watched them once or twice and that's it. Cause I can't handle watching.
I can't stand them.
But it's really amazing. It used to just be the dumb show for basically desperate housewives and the burbs who have too much time on their hands. And at the end of the day, they decided to go full political and 2016, and it's been that way ever since. And now they have a really heavy-handed influence on that suburban voter.
You don't understand. They were way annoying long before that. I remember before it was Meghan McCain, I remember wanting to go and kick Elizabeth Hasselbeck's ass. I would sit there and want to just kick her ass. I can't explain it. And then she came out having Crohn's, and so then I felt kind of bad, or celiac disease or whatever it was, and I felt kind of bad about it. But no. They were always horrible hacks.
Let me tell you, Joy and Whoopi, I don't know if they're both still on there, but they're Democratic Party border guards. That's it.
Yes.
They are the Al Sharptons of the daytime. All right?
Yes.
Which does on Sunday, and except for they don't say, I need $200 bills. All right? I used to go see Sharpton. He's a friend of mine. He's a great entertainer. He's an entertainer.
He's an entertainer.
He go up to on Saturday. He goes up and does an act for 30 minutes. He does a monologue and he gets laughs and he sings, and you know, that's a Saturday at the House of Justice. But you know, politically, he's not that astute. But he's part of the Democratic Party hierarchy. They co-opted him. Cornel West called him out on it many times.
Oh yeah,
and so is James Clyburn.
Oh, he's horrible. Horrible.
It's really dreadful what we have. In both black leadership and black media. Don Lemon, I guess,
he's going down next. He's next.
Horrible.
You know,
relationship that he had with Cuomo was really pathetic, wasn't it?
Well, again, it's not, but it's not news. It's entertainment, and that's what it's become. And ever since, there were two significant pieces of legislation that have happened in my lifetime that basically changed the course of history. Reagan, removing the Fairness Doctrine in 87, and Clinton putting through the Telecom Act in 96. And because of those two things, you now have a completely monopolistic type of news entertainment complex or, you know, whatever you want to call
it's
it.
It's a complete blurring of news with entertainment.
But Randy, my God, did you freaking nail it? They are the Democratic Party border guards. That is what they are. Horrible. And they are paid
They pay Zeri Melber's salary and Ali Velshi's salary. They're not going to talk. Here they are. None of those assholes will talk about Julian Assange, who is a journalist. Yeah. And if he goes down, they go down. Or maybe they won't because they're so closely. You know, they had this thing called Operation Mockingbird, the CIA, where they just co-opted all of these journalists. They've got to be part of that Operation Mockingbird still, if it still exists, because they will not say. And they left them alone in the trenches. All right. It's like a World War One thing where they leave somebody that's injured and say goodbye and let them stand there or lie there to die. That's what they've done. And you know what? It's shameful. And history will not forget these guys. And I'm talking about all of those people on MSNBC.
The biggest hack of them all, in my opinion, is
Rachel Maddow.
I would say Maddow's definitely.
He's a grifter.
She's number one. But the person I'm really thinking of is Jim Acosta. And the reason why.
Oh, that's CNN.
MSNBC. Yes, definitely Rachel Maddow. But when it comes to just hackery. The news over news, use that
that's
term.
That's not loosely, news.
But
fake news.
But you
it
have
would be Acosta. News if it was news.
Nobody used Trump to try to further their career more than Jim Acosta. And not only that, this son of a bitch writes a book about journalistic integrity, and he's on a book tour, and somebody nailed him with the Assange question, and this guy was a deer in headlights. He didn't know what to say because he's a hack. And at that moment,
you know what? Can I ask you a question? Have you ever seen? Because I think it's the same person, Jim Acosta and Jim Sciotto in the same room together.
Oh God!
I don't know who that is. Should I know?
The other guy who uses a lot of Brill Cream. There are two guys that use Brill Cream, and they're both, correspondents. If you want to call them correspondents, they're not journalists. Jim Acosta's not a G. What kind of investigative has he done?
I don't know. He's just as much of a journalist as, say, Chris Cuomo.
And you know, as we wind down the conversation, Randy, I would love for you to just share with us what it was like being in that room for the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the smorgasbord of the worst of the worst when it comes to people who consider themselves journalists, but in reality, they're just
neoliberal shills
for power.
All right, let me tell you the story. Here's how it happens. Because I was being hammered by liberals. Because I helped Trump win and I wouldn't say that I wasn't right. I wouldn't testify. I just refused to testify in front. And then I finally said, look, I'm getting sick of being hammered. And I said, I was not the back channel. And I told someone from Yahoo News. So Yahoo News invited me to be part of the, I was like, what do you call it? Someone to show. Here I am in a room with Adam Schiff, talking to me, Nancy Pelosi talking to me. I was just, someone to show around. The credit co was here. He's right in the middle of the news. He's on Ari Melber. And I hung out with, I was recording it all for, Jimmy Dore. I had like a thing on my lapel, a phone. I recorded a lot of it. And I hung out with that guy, Jeff Weaver. And I sat at the table with Weaver. The only problem was, and these people are all in that room, all of these congressmen. And I talked to Trey Gowdy. He was actually kind of fun to hang out with. So I go into the dinner. I am so sloshed on martinis. I've had like 7 martinis because that Yahoo News had shrimp and all this great food. And I kept drinking the martinis. The guy said, have another one. It was Grey Goose. And so I'm really hammered. And I go around from the Jeff Weaver table where I was assigned with a few others. And then I went to the CNN table and sat next to this asshole for a minute, Chris Cillizza. All right. I sat down next to him and Tate Baudouin was on the other side looking at me like I was an ape that escaped out of the Bronx Zoo. And the one guy, Joe Johns, was sitting next to me. And so now I get really hammered. I keep drinking. Chris Cillizza leaves. He didn't want to be near me. I get in the middle of the room. The woman is talking to comedian, and I said, why are they giving CNN an award? They should be giving it to Julian Assange. Julian Assange, I sat in the middle of the room. The next thing you know, it was like a scene from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Somebody grabs me from one side and the other side, and they drag me out of that. I'm serious. They drag me out of there. And I feigned a heart attack as I was going out, but just dragged me out. And they took me, it took me outside. I snuck back in, and then I was arrested. But I was there yelling, Julian Assange should be getting this award. Max Blumenthal did a whole story because I was supposed to hang out with him afterwards, him and Onion and some other people from RT. We were going to go over to and break up all of these parties, crash these parties that I could have got them into, like this, the MSNBC post-dinner party. And so I think they were disappointed in that, that they didn't get to go. But I was thrown out, was so martinied out. But it was because I was out there screaming right in the middle of the room. You had all these the attorney general there, every Congress. Trump wasn't there. He was smart. He didn't want to be part of it. It was so dull. And they had that woman, I forgot her name, this black comedian. She supposedly did well. I don't know. I don't remember. All I know is dragged out because she was screaming for Julian Assange.
She's not Black Michelle Wolf, is she?
I think she's... She wasn't bad.
It wasn't her. It was when they started to give out. Imagine giving awards to CNN.
No, I find it ridiculous. I find most award shows ridiculous.
Well, it's a circle jerk. It's a group that really likes to pat
each
other on the back.
They're very self-important.
Because again, this is basically, you know, this is the fraternities at Ivy League that basically just figure out a way to continue running the show. And there is this sense of like the, you know, like the cool club in high school, like we're part of the club and you're not invited. That's what it is. You know, Carlin would say it's a big club and you're not in it. No, it's a small club and you're not invited. And that's basically how they operate.
Yeah, they like, really are. They're part of the, and I don't use the term deep state at all anymore. It's like, you know, I used to use it, but I don't, just the institutions there. They're part of the institutions, you could say there. But you know, this, the Yahoo guys were very nice to me. I don't even think they know why I got, but it's like, I remember the next day I was so drunk. I'd never been that drunk. And I went the following year to the party at Yahoo News, but Michael Isikoff had to follow me around there to make sure that I didn't drink. All right. Cause they were afraid I would make trouble again. And that was it. And then Ali Velshi and I spoke for a few minutes and he held my dog. And he had me on his show to talk about Assange, but yeah, had some dildo on as well. I forgot his name, Ben Collins. Ben Collins, what an idiot he is to say that Assange was working for the Russians. It was bullshit, man. It was all bullshit. And here's a guy been in jail and a maximum, worse than the Tower of London where he is right now. A journalist won more awards than all of CNN's, and all of them weigh a lot more than the awards that CNN got when they gave each other awards. It's like Hollywood giving out awards for the best motion picture.
It's all silly.
It's all self-promotional trash. It's an infomercial, and that's what it was that night. It's too bad that this brilliant man, this gentleman, anti-war guy, he's not a liberal, not a Democrat, he's some kind of liberal. I don't know what his, he doesn't do identity politics. He just calls them. That's why people like him. A lot of people like him, whether it be Rand Paul, Cornel West. People like him across the spectrum because he's got great, Roger Stone likes him. He's got great integrity, Julian Assange, and he was willing he went after the national security state. All right.
Yeah. So guys, we're scrolling per usual. If you haven't called the Department of Justice comment line to tell them to drop the case against Assange, we're scrolling it across the bottom of the screen. I kind of do that every time his name comes up. So yeah.
Thank you for doing that. And that's a great public service to do that. And, you know, there's a good chance, you know, I'd love to be back on when I make my announcement for governor.
I was in the back of my head. I'm like, so you're going to come back on when you announce your run for governor?
Maybe I'll break it right here because we had such good chemistry here.
That's
right. Thank you.
Are you making an official announcement on generational change? What are we doing here, Randy?
Stop talking like that. You sound crazy.
Well, I got the radio voice, so I have to play into it.
Yeah.
Brandon, we cannot thank you enough for coming on our show this evening. This has
thank
been
you for taking a chance to have me on.
Are
of
you
course.
I, this is why we do what we do, because we're not here to be, you know, just this, you know, cookie cutter type operation.
We're really transforming politics into service.
And this is what it's all about. And you cannot be afraid of the truth. And I think technology in a way is our greatest assets, our greatest detriment. We've become such a lethargic society. You know, we need millions of people in the streets like you have in Paris, if God forbid they try to take away some type of right. You know, we don't have that in our country.
We got to have, you remember Grandpa Al Lewis, one of the great activists of all time. I ran his campaign for governor in 98 and Senate in 2000. Hillary did a dirty trick to get him out of the Senate race. You would not, that's for another day. And her and de Blasio, her campaign manager, did something. They invited me and Grandpa Al Lewis in there because he was running. He had the Green Party. He was on the ballot line, and they pulled something to get him off. And that's a long story. But he used to say, if you want, and he was there every day. We were fighting the Rockefeller drug laws at age 88. He'd be on in front of Rockefeller Center carrying a sign. He says, you got to get the asses of the masses on the street. That was it. That's the only way you're going to get change, is get the asses of the masses
on the street
like they did in France. That we got to have general strikes. But, you know, you'll be censored if you, if you're a proponent of this kind of activity.
Well, so again, And that's why I say, you know, listen, I totally and look, I support gun rights. I think it's way past due that something gets done. But with all due respect, we don't need a million white women from the burbs with pink hats on walking the streets of D.C. for a wedge issue, when you should be having millions of people in the streets for universal health care, environmental justice, criminal justice, a living wage, and having an education system that actually works
Produce people like Warren Boebert.
I just wrote the five pillars of my campaign. All right, there you go. Maybe you'll run for lieutenant governor. You come to Jersey, migrate to New York.
Don't tempt him.
I've already got my good friend Jordan Cheriton, who does Status Quo News, who desperately wants me to move back to Jersey. So I feel, and this is just...
I'm going to Jersey tomorrow. I'm sorry, I had to say this, to see Steve Donziger this week.
Oh.
Please send him our
best. Yes.
He was on our podcast right before he, you know...
Oh,
right.
I got a message from his lawyer. I got to fill out this form and try to get in this week. And he's in a prison for 6 months. Once you get in, people forget about you. You become a number. And he's a martyr. And he's a great guy. Thank you for having him on.
Are you?
Absolutely. We host whistleblowers.
So if he's in Jersey, is he at Rahway? Is that where they're home?
No, that's a state prison. It's a federal minimum security prison there, but it doesn't matter if it's minimum, maximum.
He's been incarcerated essentially for 2 years.
Yes, he's been under house arrest.
That's losing your liberty. I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sure his house is nicer than whatever facility he's in now, but that's still losing your liberty. It's completely unacceptable without any due process, mind you.
7 years with Julian Assange in an embassy and 2 years in a dungeon. All right.
Yeah.
We try to tell people all the time, and we'll leave on this note. If you and look, Ben Franklin is my favorite founding father. And he said, those who are willing to give up liberty for a sense of security deserve neither. And it's true, because the more you give it up, look at what's happening now with the new CEO of Twitter. The person literally said, his first sentence was, "We're not abiding by the First Amendment." Of course you're not, because you never did, and now you're just being transparent.
They just need to be nationalized.
Yeah, it's really shameful, and we got to find different platforms to do this.
Yeah.
What was I going to say about my favorite is Thomas Paine? He said a lot of great stuff, and we did a 4-part series on Paine because Paine was really the, and he got ostracized by John Adams and all the establishment guys back then. They didn't want Paine around. They used him to motivate the troops, to fight against the Hessians and against the Brits and everything. But he was really great on women's rights. He was way ahead of his time. He went over to France, and he was part of the French Assembly in 1791. He nearly got beheaded. It was only by some kind of a mistake inside of his cell. They had the wrong cell mark. But Franklin hated him, and a lot of Gouverneur Morris hated him. They all hated him. not Franklin. Franklin liked him. He and Franklin are the ones that founded the Pennsylvania Anti-Slavery Society. Franklin was a great man.
They were also, you know, along with Thomas Jefferson, and I'm not sure about John Adams, but these men were also atheists. And there is this rewriting of history that they want to pretend like all these men were like these super hardcore Christians. And it's not true. I mean, you had, you know, your Patrick Henrys of the world. But at the end of the day, these were very free thinking men who understood the future and what was coming and how we could avoid losing our republic. As Ben Franklin said, it's a republic if you can keep it. And right now, it's getting close to where it's not going to survive.
Yeah, you know what? I would think that the super rich right now, these guys like, you know, the young guys like, what's his name, Zuckerberg and all these others, would be a little more progressive, unlike the other ones, the robber barons or people like Carnegie or Morgan that came in. You would think that these guys of this generation would be a little more progressive, but they're not.
Zuckerberg, unfortunately, is a sociopath. He may be a psychopath. And that, unfortunately, is what happens with a lot of these guys. And the one guy who's had some semblance of understanding of all this is Jack Dorsey, who was head of Twitter, and now he's stepping down. So, you know, the dam is going to break at some point. That's what's going to happen. But as JFK said, if you make peaceful revolution impossible, you make violent revolution inevitable. And that's kind of where we're heading. And that's just it's like at some point, you can only squeeze the people so tight, because now we're living in an age where people see through all the bullshit and they know it's bullshit and they don't want to take it anymore. Yeah, so
they've had enough of it. But what do you do? I mean, I think that if there was some kind of unifying theme that we could all get together. And as you both said, we need to get people on the streets. We need to shut things down. But we have the vehicle to do it. You have the internet, but because that's a possibility through social media, you know, it's going to come to an end. I mean, how much longer is this going to last?
That's what we're saying.
We're trying.
That's
we're working we're on it.
That's
we're working
why we're
on
transforming
it.
Transforming politics into service. Randy Credico,
thank you so much.
And when you do make your announcement,
I'll be there and I'll be running like Andrew Cuomo. We'll talk to you later. Give that big, that little cute cotone a big kiss for me.
I will do.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, brother.
I got to go make up with Bianca. Great talking to you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Have a great evening, brother.
Well, that
is a conversation.
Well, Catan people it's a very particular bunch. I know you hate to hear it, but it's Barbara Streisand. It's Jane Fonda.
Sounds a little elitist, Jen.
There is nobody more elitist than Lulu.
There is nobody more elitist than Barbara Streisand. Sorry.
Well, she cloned her Catans. I told you that. So her Catan now is a clone of her original.
Well, as you guys know, it is Wednesday, and it is time for News and Amuse. And we, of course, do have some wonderful stories this evening, as you guys know. So, look, we'll lead off with it. Obviously, we were talking about him, but, you know, Chris Cuomo, look, this wasn't one incident. This was probably dozens of incidents, and they finally had to get rid of him. And why did they have to get rid of him? They had to, and again,
it's conflict of interest, but the truth is
he's not even fired. He's suspended.
Well, here's what's so interesting, that there's any controversy with this, but there's never any controversy with how people like him even get those jobs, because someone like him only has the position he has.
Because his name is Cuomo.
And he was born into the governor's mansion, basically. I mean, I think he was like 12 when his dad became governor. But the point is, this is somebody who was raised with the elite of the elite, went to Ivy League school. This is someone who has everything handed him. It's like, that is the entitlement. That is what's gross. Not that he's somebody who is just such a hardcore journalist, that he was just one of the best, that they needed him.
I can remember when the first town hall between Hillary and Bernie took place. He tried every which way to throw gotchas at Bernie left and right, didn't want to give him a fair shake. And then Hillary comes out there and he literally kisses her on the cheek. It's like, at some point,
he's part of the club. That's just the way it is.
Well,
100%. So it's, you know, he's in the club.
But at that moment, you had to know that this ain't a square deal, as Teddy Roosevelt would say. It's not a square deal. You're getting a shaft. And that's what happened. And that was just one of many examples, but basically showing you that they think they're masters of the universe. And this guy, I mean, He's Fredo. Not the sharpest knife in the drawer. He really is. He is only, think of it.
I think of him like I think of W. I really do. They even went to the same elitist Ivy League school.
Think about how many more qualified people there were that could have had that position.
Think about how many more qualified people there were that could have been president. When elitism and cronyism is how everything is decided, it's not as meritocracy. You're going to get garbage at the top. Garbage in, garbage out.
And let me tell you, the whole thing that he and his brother were pulling with that stupid routine with the, you know, they're going to talk about going to mom's house on Sunday lasagna. And, you know, let me see if I can fit this thing up my big Italian nose. You know what I'm talking about? You know, this is where I come from in Jersey, in New York. And this is how we talk. And people get a kick out of that shit. But the problem is you have thousands and thousands of people dying in New York. And this son of a bitch who was the governor got a $5 million book deal. Could you imagine if Ron DeSantis pulled something like that in Florida, how that would be wall-to-wall coverage on the news and they would never stop talking about it?
Yeah, but he's a Democrat.
But he's on the wrong side.
But that's Cuomo's a Democrat, even though he's really not.
But I make a statement like that and all of a sudden, what are you, a supporter of the GOP? No, I'm a supporter of justice, you dumbass. And that is exactly what we're trying to do here. So when somebody like Cuomo gets in a person's face because he calls him Fredo and says, I'm going to throw your ass down the stairs.
He acts like a thug.
He is.
A thug. Yeah.
Listen, there's a lot of derogatory Italian slurs that I could throw at, you know, Mr. Cuomo. I'm not going to do it, but you know what I'm talking about. When a guy wants to get in a guy's face, this is a guy who's on the news. And let's be honest, okay? It would be one thing. I don't mind machismo. That's just that. That's my Irish side. That's just the way it is. But Cuomo wasn't doing this to some guy who was his size. He was doing his machismo bullshit to a guy who was half his size, trying to act like a tough guy.
He's just all, yeah.
And when he did that, and he didn't even get reprimanded for it. They didn't say, you know, you need to take like a week off and cool down. No, they allowed him to go about his business.
I think a lot of it is because his brother was governor. So now that his brother's not governor anymore, he's not protected anymore. He's no longer made. He got unmade.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there you go. But I think we've
Elvira, learn how to take a joke.
No, and here's the thing is that we're not talking, the Fredo thing has nothing to do with Italians. It's just from The Godfather. I mean, they do happen to be an Italian family, but the mockery of that character has to do with that particular story. It's not really an affront to Italians. Yeah. It's a particular character from a movie.
And I do agree that, you know, he is a good looking guy. And I can see that that's why why his ratings were as high as they were. And that's why people were coming onto the show. There you go. So Carrie, you know, an Italian in New York is telling you what it would be like to tell fellow New Yorkers that Cuomo isn't good. And so, all right. Well, look, it is what it is, Elvira. And I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings.
Yeah, we're not so PC. But we already talked about the Lauren Boebert thing. So I don't think we need to really get into that again.
No,
but
the only thing that I think we can mention is just the fact that, you know, Ilhan's courage to go through what she goes through. I mean, talk about, you know, you hear so
I want her as a guest so badly.
Well, you hear so often, you know, how people, you hear about like these congressional representatives who talk about like, oh, our job is so hard and we have to just walk in Ilhan's shoes for one freaking day and shut up.
Yeah,
like,
she definitely honestly gets it from every direction.
But she doesn't even try to draw attention to herself. No. She's not like AOC. She's not searching the spotlight.
No.
She's just...
And she's actually a very successful legislator.
She's one of the most... She's in the top five.
Of legislators who get things through.
She's like Bernie. She really is. She's the amendment queen, you might as well call her, because she gets her stuff through.
Oh, she gets her stuff through. She gets what she wants done.
And that's literally on top of getting fat. And listen, I have communicated with her staff. Hats off to them for the hell that they have to go through with the calls, the endless calls that they probably have to deal with. You get that hijab piece of crap off TV, blah, blah, blah. Imagine doing that every day. Yeah. Hundreds of times every single day. Emails, phone calls. They probably send postcards.
Well, she also has higher security, but she needs it. But let me say, guys, her recent book called This Is Our America. I did the audiobook, which she narrates. She's amazing. Yeah. Like, I love her. She is like, yeah, she's like a Shiro. She's amazing. And for somebody like Lauren Boebert, from her little privileged seat of wherever it is that she's from to go after someone like Ilhan Omar, who this Lauren Boebert would not survive a day in the life that Ilhan Omar had to flee from in when she left Somalia and went into a refugee camp in Kenya. Like, this is a woman who has been through so much and, in her life. And it's all she is trying to do is serve her community. That is literally why she's where she is.
And a big F you to Marjorie Taylor Greene for still perpetuating the lie that Ilhan married her brother.
Oh my God.
It's like you.
It's just factually inaccurate.
And the thing about.
It's factually inaccurate.
But one thing I will also say about Marjorie, to her credit, is that she's a transparent bigot. And I respect transparent bigots.
I don't. I think she's a pig.
Well,
she is
a pig, but it's better than being an undercover bigot, which is what a lot of people want.
They're disgusting.
She doesn't hide it. Credit to you. But you being a congressional representative in this country, I don't care how much of a backwoods, you know, deep South district representative you may be, we don't need that in this country anymore.
It's just, it's
we never needed it.
And you know
what?
Shame on any representative
who doesn't speak up.
Yes, because this is your workplace. This is your workplace. It's toxic when people act like that. When I worked at a big law firm, I'm going to say it's probably not that different. There's offices, people coming and going. If there were people that were treating coworkers like that, this would be a problem.
100%.
They would be fired. Now, granted, this isn't something where you could get fired. I mean, you can lose positions and lose, you know, different committees and whatever. But these people in Congress should not be tolerating this behavior from a coworker. They should be shunning her. These women should not be getting, not only not getting media attention, but they should be ostracized from their coworkers.
The problem
for
is that
this.
These two women in particular have really attached themselves to Trump, and they basically see themselves as Teflon, that they could do whatever they want because if Daddy Trump has to step in and save them, he will, and no one's going to cross them. And even the one person who did, Representative Mason, South Carolina, credit to her, at the end of the day, they are not going to cross him because Trump is still very much in control because he is, again, a product of the times. He's benefiting from the fact that our government is broken.
And the fact that the Democrats don't offer anything better.
They can't. Because they know the people want certain things and they can't deliver it to them because they are wholly dependent on corporate special interests and they want no part of it.
Speaking of corporate whores.
Let's start with Sousy first. So as it turns out, Mr. Corporate Meister himself in Long Island, Tom Sousy, he is the person who was holding the seat for a couple of semesters, I guess you would
New York's
it.
Third.
New York's third congressional district. And friend of the show and former slate mate of Jen's, Melanie DiRigo, was running to unseat him in a Democratic primary.
And she is running again, and now it's an open seat.
He thinks he's going to be the next governor of New York.
Good luck with that,
That's
Tom.
Cute. So now that he is, and listen, even if he doesn't, what's he going to do? He'll lose and become a high-paying Wall Street consultant or God knows what else. So thankfully, he won't be serving the public anymore, at least on Capitol Hill.
Let's just say this. The people in New York's third are getting a potential reprieve and have the opportunity to elect somebody who will actually represent them.
100%. Now, I have no doubt that this is going to turn into a free-for-all like it did down here in the 20th Congressional District of Florida, where a lot of people are going to be coming out of the woodworks and jumping in. I'm going to be the representative.
When it's
now.
An empty seat, all the vultures will come out. But none of them had the balls. And I said it about Sheila down here when she ran against Alcee, and I'll say it against Melanie. The person who has the backbone and the balls to run against the sitting
machine.
Incumbent,
or against the machine.
That's the person you want fighting for you 100%. In Congress. So the fact that all these people, now that there's an open seat, now it's safe for me. I'm not going to challenge anybody. I'm not going to ruffle any feathers. It's easier.
She's raised.
Those people come out. Those are not the people you need representing you in Congress.
Melanie has raised a lot of money. She has already run once and did well. She has an excellent opportunity to win this. So rather than get complacent,
we're going to have her back on with all the New York people.
Go all in on this race because it's a race that can be won. And when you consider the red wave that's coming,
support the person with the balls, my friends.
Bingo. And so as we wind down our show for the evening, where else could we possibly end than with the
The
dreaded queen herself? You know,
do you see how I did that?
Yes. And the thing that's so interesting about Hillary Clinton is the fact that very often with a lot of politicos, even as slow a scum as George W. Bush, they manage to up their approval with general society after
because they're fairly, you know what? Because they have a certain charisma and likability to them, even when you know they're war criminals. Like they just somehow manage to have likability. This woman has no likability. I can't with her. What are you looking for?
Where's my bag of tricks?
It's all up there. I can't, you're not jumping over stuff to get there right now.
All right.
He wants his Clinton mask. But so what this is saying is Joe Biden's polling flounders. Hillary Clinton comes out to bat for him because that's what you need. When you're low in the polls, you need Hillary Clinton to come out for you. So I really thought of that as pouring salt on a wound. Like you have this gaping wound, Joe. You're so poor in the polls. Let the most unpopular person who could not beat Donald Trump come out to bat for you. What could possibly go wrong, Joe? She is the worst. So what is she out there doing? She's basically out there fear-mongering. The clip that I saw of her was basically nonstop fear-mongering that we have to be fearful and that constant like red baiting and all of that nonsense with her.
I just can't. I tried telling her to stop Hillary. You're not making any progress. You're not helping. You're just hurting. And then she hurt me. She really hurt me.
She's just hurtful.
I can't take her pain anymore. She just doesn't want to give up. And I'm kind of feeling a little lonely.
I just do not understand how that in any way, you know what, please, Hillary, keep stumping for Joe. Keep stumping for Joe. It's only going to hurt him. I do not understand why anybody would want her to show her face to represent them.
I think that she's just kind of, you know, running out of material at this point, trying to convince people that she knows what's best for everybody. And I keep telling her, you keep pointing the finger at the people. The people are going to point the finger back at you and ain't going to be good. They're going to be pointed like that. You know, that's a big problem. And, you know, poor Hillary. Why am I saying that? I really don't care anymore.
I know, you probably never did.
I just don't have the spot to make any moves at this point. I'm getting old and kind of worn down.
She's horrible.
I'm just trying to be as nice as I can to as many people as I can because I'm trying to avoid going.
But what this really shows, to me is she is one of those people. You
know, I just want to say, I did not have sexual relations with any of those underage girls on that.
Yeah, island. Whatever. Lolita Express.
That's all I wanted
so
to say. Just remember.
You were on the Lolita Express 26 times.
I was not there. They can't prove it. And listen, it was all business. We were having a good time.
You're a pig.
I just want to have fun.
Yeah, I know.
But remember, folks. I'm a decent guy and I'm really not wanting to go down. There's only so many people like it.
Don't worry. You won't live long in prison. It won't. It'll go quickly for you. I assure you.
I better warm up that passport. I'll see y'all later.
And put your soap on a rope.
Yeah. He's really, the fact that you've got like the pilot, like, you know, in the case now,
I just find her so despicable. I don't understand that somebody who could have that little self-awareness. I honestly get, like, I actually do. I know someone in my personal life who has that little self-awareness, but it's on a grand scale.
I don't agree with you.
She thinks she's helpful?
No, I don't think that's not what it is. I think that she's just a very hurt and resentful person.
She can't stay out of the camera. Like, she's just so, it should have been me. It should have been me. And it's like, she just won't go away. It's like a bad cartoon.
And it's even worse because she is no different than Cuomo or anybody else. Now, she may not be a product of nepotism, but she is a product of the last name Clinton. Like, that is why she got where she is. Let's not be, you know, fools about this.
Well, the two of them really did it together.
They did.
They were a team from the beginning. And she was just as much a part of him getting where he got as both ways. That worked both directions. That's their arrangement. Right. So, but regardless, she's toxic. She is the most toxic. She's terrible.
It's a reflection of how far the party has sunk and the fact that they still want to wheel her out to give commentary on the most important things. You know, you're trying not to get destroyed in the midterms.
No, they're not trying that. They're actually seemingly to me working against themselves on purpose.
So if you have Hillary Clinton come out and you know statistically it's been proven time and again that she is a net negative and yet you still wheel her out, then people have to start questioning what your intentions are. And they should.
Well, her intentions are just keeping her elite class elite. That's always her intention. That's true. That's her only intention, is maintaining control and power and her class as part of the oligarchy.
So with that said,
she's disgusting.
I had a feeling that the Randy Credico conversation was going to be good.
Well, he's entertaining. So, he's got great stories. I mean, he met everybody from like Rodney Dangerfield to Frank Sinatra. That's really cool.
And
he
does really great. And I have to say, he does a very good impression of Marlon Brando.
I do like that he got escorted out of the press corps dinner because of shouting, you know, Julian Assange should be getting this award, which is true, by the way.
That's true.
We should be building monuments.
We need to have more conversations with guys like Randy Credico. That's all I can say. And
I'm sorry we offended the Italians. I would never want to do that. Like, I love the Italians.
I think Elvira was just, you know, maybe a little.
I feel bad. Like, I love the Italians.
I love the Italians too. They're like, that's what I grew up with.
I really don't mean to be mocking the Italians. I think that he does it more from it's like a Jersey accent, like kind of from the neighborhood kind of.
Yeah, that is what it is.
Okay. So I don't think it's like a racial thing. Because if it was a racial thing, it's more of a Jersey vibe thing.
Carrie Capitola, can you tell him that I was having a little
fun? He's just playing.
I'm having fun.
But yeah.
Can't be overly sensitive. We're too sensitive a culture today. We got to stop that crap.
I equally dislike all people.
Yeah. There you go. I hate everybody.
I hate everybody.
But I like you. So with that said,
what do we have coming up?
Well, we've got, I forgot what we have on Sunday. I know we got a couple of, Shania Chowdhury. He's going to be coming back.
India. Next week.
Yes. Do we want to see? Yeah, I guess we could.
I don't know. What are we saying? What are you talking about?
I think India Walton is going to be making her first public appearance since the election, and it's going to be on our show.
It's very exciting.
So,
I mean, it is. It's exciting, but yet infuriating.
But
at the
also,
same time.
We were also one of the people who had her on early before things really took off with her race. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to hear her reflection and what her next moves are, but also, you know, the lengths that the corporate establishment will go to take down a non-corporate person. And her story is as good a story as any, because it really nails the whole, you know, BS that the party tries to sell to the wall about this idea that they give everybody a fair shake. No, they don't. And
they have any sort of unity in their big tent. Because if you had unity in your big tent, then the person who won the Democratic election would be the person you would get behind, and you wouldn't work against them as a write-in candidate and get behind someone doing that. That just makes you a hypocrite and a sellout.
Appreciate you, Carrie. And
thank you.
We will have, really looking forward to this conversation. This one's going to be fun. We are going to have Max Alvarez, who you guys may know is a regular on Breaking Points with Crystal and Sagar, as well as Rising. Great political commentator. He'll be joining us on Sunday afternoon. We may have a guest candidate as well.
Don't keep me here too late because I'm driving to Orlando.
That's right. That's right.
I'm going with my girl to
Jen,
Orlando.
Where are you going?
We are going on a pilgrimage to a place called Gideon's Bake Shop, which is a cookie place in Orlando.
It's a special, special, special.
It's a special, special, special place. And you have to, unless you want to wait in like the lines are hours long. And they actually opened up one at Disney Saratoga Springs.
So
but that's
one
not
of those
when
places that it's like with the cookie dough ice cream shops where they literally make the cookie dough.
This is not cookie dough. It's a bakery. Right. But we already put in our orders. You have to put in your orders 72 hours ahead of time.
That's
we put in our orders.
Business.
This is hardcore. But if you go to Gideon's Bake House, online, you'll see why it is we're making the pilgrimage. And so then we're spending the night on Sunday night, and then our cookies will be ready for us Monday morning.
I can smell them from here.
Look, anybody who knows me knows that I have the worst sweet tooth, or the best, depending on your perception.
Fair enough.
And so, you know, I'd pretty much go anywhere for like warm baked goods. Chase, I can't believe I'm driving for cookies that aren't cannabis.
So Sunday, one more time, we will have Max Alvarez. Next Wednesday, we will see India Walton right here. And don't forget, we are planning the Festivus for
the rest of us. December 23rd,
it
Festivus.
It may also be a huge day because it may be the launch of our new studio.
We might. We might. We need to get a Festivus poll.
Fine.
I have a lot of problems with you people.
Maybe we'll have a jousting duel. Like we'll have like a Star Wars.
I don't know what we'll do, but you're going to have to. I think you are going to have to be the person who does the feats of strength.
Fair enough. We appreciate you guys. We hope you enjoyed it. And we will see you over the weekend.
Bye, all.
Thanks for watching. If you want to support our mission to transform politics into service, please like this video, subscribe, follow us on social media, and consider joining our Patreon, where you'll get early access to our interviews as well as other exclusive content. Links are in the description. Peace out.